Diving beneath the headlines on the MBTA this week is another tranche of closings. More bad news about new red and orange line trains have pushed what has become a perennial public problem back into the news cycle. Everyone knows the stakes at this point.
The results of an underinvested, mismanaged transit system came to a head with a death on the red line, a fire on the orange line, and a month-long shutdown of the orange line that did not yield the promised results.
We don't have a functioning economy without a functioning public transit system. It is just a top priority.
Jim Rooney of the Greater Boston Chamber of Commerce there excoriating the tea in his annual State of Business address a few weeks ago, sound courtesy of the chamber, and then Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey on Radio Boston earlier this week. So the question is, with troubled finances, a bad contract for new trains, shutdowns for basic repairs ongoing, a new governor, and the search for a new general manager underway, can the Commonwealth get the MBTA back on track? Well, here to help us try to answer that question, Boston Herald transportation reporter Gayla Cawley. Gayla, it's your first time with us. Welcome.
Thank you.
And then two folks to welcome back. First, Chris Dempsey, who's a public transit advocate and former candidate for Auditor of Massachusetts. Welcome back, Chris.
Great to be here.
And on the line, we have Daryl C. Murphy, who you may know as the host of The Common, but not only rides the T, but is actually the former transportation reporter for us here at WBUR. Hey, Daryl, thanks for joining.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
All right. So, Gayla, I am going to start with you because you had this story this week. It actually led to the conversation I had with Maura Healey on Wednesday where she made that comment. This is about CRRC, which is the company that has the contract for the new orange and red line trains. You found some documents, got to hold some documents. Give us the headlines on what you found.
Right. So I was able to get a public records request of minutes from closed door meetings between the MBTA and CRRC representatives from 2022. So that revealed just a host of problems that have happened with orange and red line car production. Just some issues with lack of delivery. Only 9 of 34 married pairs, which is 2 car sets of orange line cars, had been delivered.
I'm sorry, I am, because it's beneath the headlines, going to take a moment to chuckle at the fact that they're called married pairs, because I did not know that.
Right.
I'm sorry. Please go ahead.
So far beneath their goal for the year, as far as the goal that CRRC had, some instances of pushing cars through inspections, saying that the cars were fine when repairs weren't being made that were identified as defects by the MBTA. So forms were filed by CRRC to say that those repairs had been made when they hadn't been. Quality issue item reports had been force closed without repairs being made for those.
So force closed, meaning they found a way to close the ticket without fixing the problem.
Right. So in one instance, according to the minutes, there had been 14 issues found with one particular car. And that quality item report was force closed.
So do you know, is that car now one of the cars that the MBTA is using?
I'm not. I don't know that for sure. But I know that that had been a common problem, according to the minutes.
So Chris Dempsey, I'll turn to you. I mean, I know you follow the reporting closely. I know you're aware of Gayla's story. When you read that, right, was that a moment for you of, well, yeah, or was that a moment of, seriously?
Well, first of all, I want to compliment Gayla on her reporting and unearthing that, and then you, Tiziana, for making sure that you're pushing the administration to grapple with it and deal with it. That being said, I know that they're aware that this is maybe the most crucial transportation issue facing the Commonwealth today, is getting these red and orange line cars back on track. You chuckled at the concept of a married pair, and normally we like to celebrate long-lasting marriages. We have red line cars that have been married pairs running on our system for over 50 years. We're celebrating their 50-plus year anniversaries now. That is not a good story to tell. We have to have these new cars so that we have basic safety and reliability on these two core lines, the red and orange lines, two of the busiest lines in the MBTA system. Unfortunately, while I'm so impressed with Gayla's reporting, it was not surprising, because we know that this has been a challenge for many years now. In 2018, these cars were supposed to be rolling off the line on a regular basis. We were supposed to have now something like 200 or 300 of those cars. We have only 90 delivered. So we're behind, and there's no sense at the moment of momentum to get it back on track.
Okay, so I hadn't been planning to ask you this question, but I'm going to now. You ran for auditor, right? Would, in most circumstances, would that level of performance on a contract not trigger basically, you know, a major reconsideration of the contract?
Well, it absolutely should, but here's the problem with big contracts like this. We're seeing this with the Red and Orange Line cars. We're seeing it with the MBTA's fare collection system, which is another billion-dollar project. You don't have a lot of alternatives. So the idea of going back out to the marketplace and basically restarting this process is incredibly daunting. You might need 8 or 10 years to go from starting that process to when those cars would be delivered. And we don't really have 8 or 10 years to wait with these existing Red and Orange Line cars that have been, again, running for now 50 plus years.
Okay.
And so that's the challenge here is you want to put as much pressure on the contractor as you can, but you also understand that you don't have other great options for moving somewhere else.
Okay. So Daryl Murphy, that then raises another question as I'm listening here and sort of connecting the dots. We did have Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey on Wednesday. One of the things that we asked her about was, from Gala's reporting, we'd learned that the governor had a team together that was going to, you know, sort of get on the ground and look at what was happening at CRRC, try to get the issue solved and push us forward. And I asked her about that team. Here's a little bit of what she said, Daryl.
The team will have a constant presence at the facility right now.
So
that's going to be an ongoing process.
There.
Physically, you have to be physically there.
So, Daryl, you know, I'm mindful that you've covered transportation in two different states, two Northeast, you know, regional states. This relationship between a governor and a legacy, and I'm using that term on purpose, a legacy system and a legacy office like a T, right, or public transit, how much leverage, even with human beings on the ground staring at it, right, given the being over a barrel that Chris Dempsey just told us we are, how much leverage can a governor have, Daryl?
I mean, I don't know. In my experience, you know, coming from Philadelphia, the governor, I don't know, the governor didn't have that much say because it wasn't there wasn't the same state oversight. Right. But here in Massachusetts, it seems like the state has a direct relationship with the MBTA. So I would imagine that there's got to be a lot more sway there than if it didn't. So, yeah, I mean, I'd be interested to see just how much of a heavy hand Maura Healey has in this process of getting these trains back on track.
And I'm going to stay with you for a minute, Daryl. You know, you are well tapped into riders. And I'm thinking about before a meeting, Maura Healey got on the T, you know, rode the T. I remember during the final debate asking she and Jeff Diehl about their sort of T ridership experience. It really just wasn't there for either of them. What riders, we're having all this conversation, what's the contract like and the new trains and should they be in blah, blah, blah. Have we reached a level for riders that is, well, funny almost? We're going to do a segment later in the show about when you can laugh at things when because they're so bad. Is that where we are, Daryl?
I mean, yeah, absolutely. You know, first and foremost, you're already going to be there because you are a major city with a legacy transit system that, you know, a lot of people depend on, right? So whatever the system does that's not perfect, it's going to be fodder for riders, right? But the MBTA, you're going to have that. Plus, it's a little bit more serious, you know, because really serious things happen. You know, trains catching fire, people getting caught in the door and dying, collisions and stuff like that. So yes, it gives people a lot to talk about and a lot to be concerned about, frankly, you know, and then you add on top of that some of the traffic issues that happen in the city that kind of could impact things like bus service and stuff like that. I mean, there's a lot to talk about, you know, and in a sense, I guess for the MBTA, you know, people laugh to keep from crying. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And in fact, again, we're going to talk about that in more depth a little bit later in the show. So, Gala, I'm going to turn back to you. You know, you're reporting with the Boston Herald. We've got this money problem And I wouldn't be surprised, Chris, if your eyes kind of glaze over at this point, given the number of times we've talked about these numbers problems at the T here on Radio Boston. You know, we are talking about a $200 million projected budget shortfall next year. Right now, the T is spending $270 million roughly in federal money to help offset. You've done some reporting on revenues, you know, fare revenues and where they are, whether we can even compare them to pre-pandemic levels anymore, because maybe that's just a thing that doesn't exist anymore. Gayla, in your reporting and in your sense of tracking this, where is the key money pain?
I think what you just touched on is the issue. Before the pandemic, pre-pandemic fare revenue was covering about 42% of the budget. Now it's covering about a quarter. So there's talk of reduced fares, free fares, but the budget right now is largely dependent on fare revenue, the way that it's set up, the operating budget at least. So when you lose that big chunk of revenue in the budget, that really brings a shortfall. So right now, the MBTA is relying on sales tax revenue, which is non-operating subsidy revenue, and one-time federal revenue, which is pandemic relief funds that are going to be running out in the next year. So once that happens, once those federal funds run out, you're going to be in a real situation where you're going to have hundreds of millions of dollars of budget shortfall.
So, Chris Dempsey, I'm actually literally picturing one of those silent movies, right? You've got your dun, 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 and the train is down the track and there's a cliff and everyone's silently going, oh, no. That's kind of where we are.
We're certainly headed that way. Without getting too wonky here, Tiziana, the way to think about the T is it's a organization with very high fixed costs and very low marginal costs.
So let's get that even simpler, right?
So
fixed cost means what? Marginal means?
The stuff that you have to spend on every year, whether you have zero riders or a million riders. It's track, it's stations. No matter how many people are moving through the system, that stuff is all going to cost a significant amount of money. The marginal costs are low, meaning every additional rider that takes the system is a very, very low cost, almost nothing, really. And so when you have a 20 or 30% shock to your ridership, which is what we have today, we're 30% below what we were pre-COVID, that's all very low reduction in cost for the T, but a significant reduction in revenue. And that's creating this structural deficit that we see. And so what we need from our elected leaders, from Governor Healey, and I think she's been very good on transit and will continue to be good on transit, we need from her on down to the local level an all-in effort to say we need more people back on the T, and we're going to support it with policies that encourage transit ridership and really try to better balance our incentives between transit and driving. We've got the worst traffic congestion in the country, or at least top five, depending on whatever standard or metric you use. We've got to find ways to rebalance that and get people back on the T.
So, Daryl, to underscore that, so Jim Rooney actually echoed the worst transportation piece that Chris Dempsey just said in this conversation he had with the Greater Boston Chamber of Commerce. Again, this sound is from the chamber. Here he is.
The transportation headaches aren't just on public transit. Drivers have them, too. Boston is the second most congested city in the United States and the fourth in the world. It is unacceptable that the options for commuters is to choose between nation-leading, really world-leading, congestion on highways or nation-leading safety incidents on public transit.
To wit, Daryl, we need more riders to solve the structural problem, but A, fewer people going to work every day, and B, if the fact that being in a car is a living nightmare is not enough to put people back on the T, Daryl, how do we solve the chicken and egg problem here for riders? You know, my red line train to Gayla's reporting is more than 20 minutes slower than it should be, and people die. And, you know, how do we solve that chicken and egg problem?
I wish I knew, but I mean, just from sitting here as somebody who rides somebody who rides the MBTA, you know, I take the green line, the red line, I ride the buses. I think it just has to work, you know, that's what it all comes down to. People trust these systems to get them where they need to go safely and reliably. And that's always what it comes down to. You know, people pay for this stuff. A lot of time and resources is committed to this. And that's all people want. They just want to get a return on their investment. You know what I mean? It just has to work. And it's as simple as that, you know?
So, Gayla, with that kind of ringing in my ears, right? Listen, there is no amount of conversation we can have on this that ever covers it all, ever, right? I feel like we'd have to sit here and do a week of hour-longs, and at the end of the week, we'd be like, but we didn't talk about X, right? So this is a super complex problem. But I've got to believe that in your reporting, there are a couple of threads you're following because you're like, this is the thing, right? This is a couple of the things. Where do you see sort of the real hot points that you want to stay on over these next couple of months because they're kind of key drivers of some way to crawl out of the moment we're in?
Well, I think what the two topics that we discussed as far as the Orange and Red Line train production, I think part of the problem as well with that is that the shells have already been delivered for the most part.
So a shell would be the body of the right. train that comes from a manufacturing facility in China. Is that right. where the other facility is? And then gets finished here.
Right. So the shells are made in China and then they're shipped over to the U.S. to be fitted out with hardware and assembled in Springfield. So you have that problem. So I think as far as like getting out of the contract, you'd have to cut your losses and that's hard to do when you have all of these shells stored. So I think that issue, the slow zones is an ongoing issue especially with the red line right now.
It used to be the orange line, right. Now it's more the red line.
Yeah, so a lot of work is going on with the red line in the next month with that. The new general manager, that's going to be a large issue, finding the right person for that job. There's a search going on right now. According to the governor, it's wrapping up soon. So you really need someone to be able to come in and assess everything that's been going wrong and really get a handle on what's been going on and getting ridership back up and getting the budget back on track. I would say those are some of the key drivers right now.
So Chris Dempsey, I was going to ask you to bring us home anyway, but then the level of nodding I just saw from you when Gayla mentioned the recruitment of this new general manager.
I think it's absolutely essential that we have a new general manager who brings stability to this organization. We've had something like 5 or 6 general managers in the last 6 or 7 years. I've actually lost count and lost track, but it's been too many. It's been too disruptive. We need someone who is going to be the right choice, who's going to commit to be here for the long term. And what that allows you is that stability at the top that then flows to the middle and lower parts of the organization where people are going to be willing to join that team and be part of an all-in effort to turn this agency around. If you don't have that stability at the top, I think it's very difficult to do that. And so we're all rooting for Governor Healey and her team to be able to recruit the best possible person, whether that's someone locally or someone internationally, the best possible person who can come in and have a steady hand at the wheel in the years ahead to start this slow turnaround process.
All right. Chris Dempsey, transit advocate, Gayla Cawley, Boston Herald transportation reporter, Daryl C. Murphy, host of The Common and former transportation reporter. Thanks to all three of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.